Around Comics, episode 67. Chicago, this is Around Comics, a roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I'm joined, as always, by my partners and the co-hosts of the show, Brian Salazar.
And Tom Caters. Oh, and hi. What's going on?
A new format.
And Tom Caters.
I'm the only one who doesn't have some woman bossing him around now all the time.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm a free spirit, guys.
You had to go to Detroit last weekend because your woman told you to.
I chose at the same time that she did to go with her.
Simultaneously?
Yeah, but what is the dictate that has come down from on high?
Whatever you want.
Oh, what a dictate.
What do you have to do with
it? Do whatever
three years?
You want.
Oh, I have to get engaged.
Oh!
There is no counteroffer yet. So, in legal terms, we have. Not finalized.
Yeah, welcome aboard, guys. In a couple of minutes, we'll be talking with Steve Rude. But first, I'd like to let you know that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
InStock Trades would like to welcome Steve Rude to the show and let all our listeners know that they have all four of the amazing hardcover Nexus archives discounted 35%. You can now follow Mike Barron and Steve Rude's groundbreaking sci-fi adventure for just $32.47 per volume. Remember that InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices, and all orders over $50 ship free.
I own two of those Nexus hardcovers, and plan on getting the rest probably soon, someday soon. I don't know.
Someday?
Someday.
Cameron, look for that order.
Win the lottery!
When you win the lottery!
Yes.
I'm going to only buy manga. No, I'm kidding. You can buy, like, for $50, you can get, like, 90 volumes.
Of manga?
And I read none of it. It just all goes on my shelf.
All right, folks. Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you.
I'm sorry. Check out the 9 p.m. part.
No, I'm laughing. Fun. I'm sitting over here watching Hillary Barda trying to work a computer, and it's like... It's like watching a squirrel trying to.
It's like Velociraptor hands.
Sorry, Hillary. I just couldn't help. I couldn't help saying something. It was love your work.
Come on, guys. I'm trying to beat up the porn.
I thought he had five fingers on each hand, but he's sort of
amazingly good inker for having one finger.
Only the second person to masturbate during the show.
Oh, yeah, well.
John Byrne.
How could you tell? John Byrne.
I have a sixth sense. Anyway.
All right, folks, when you're here, please remember to ask about Dark Tower's Pull List membership. It's truly one of the best you'll find anywhere. Dark Tower has a great selection of mainstream comics, independent comics, and trades, as well as statues and action figures. Come to Dark Tower Comics for all of your comics and collectible needs.
And remember that your Around Comics experience isn't complete until you've read this week's Long Box of Love. Each Thursday episode of Around Comics has a wonderfully handcrafted webcomic from Brian Bowles. Check it out every Thursday at www.aroundcomics.com.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, folks, tonight we are talking with Steve Rude.
And the dude.
Give you a little background here. In 1982, Steve Rude became widely known in the comics world when he and writer Mike Barron created Nexus, an independent science fiction comic book with a large, diverse supporting cast. The stories were complex and thought-provoking because of their treatment of difficult themes related to justice, guilt, and addiction. Barron and Rude's Nexus stories garnered a large fan following and ran for 80 issues and 7 short, almost yearly miniseries after the initial series ended. Steve Rude has won 4 Eisner Awards and 1 Kirby Award, as well as a Russ Manning Award. Rude recently penciled and wrote The Moth in 2004 while continuing to teach art classes and do commissioned work. Rude announced in 2006 the formation of Rude Dude Productions, a new publishing entity that will release new issues of Nexus and the Moth in 2007, as well as an anthology series. The new Nexus series will mark Rude's first work with Baron since the last Dark Horse Comics published issue. The new issue will be counted as number 99 and is scheduled for a July 2007 release. Now, let's talk with Steve Rude. Steve, how you doing?
As a matter of fact, I'm doing really good. I completed my work for the day. Pizza's on its way. I've got a couple of gorgeous chicks over right now, and the kids are quiet.
The life of a comic book artist.
He's like a rock star, man.
Nice. Well, that sounds great. You don't need to go, do you?
No, I sure don't. I'm staying right here.
Okay, just let us know when the pizza gets there. We'll give you a break. Well, Steve, I think the big announcement was back in November about the formation of Rude Dude Productions, and I guess we'll start there. Can you let us know what Rude Dude Productions is and what you guys are aiming to accomplish?
Well, initially, the whole idea came about because the Moth got canceled. And the Moth was so near and dear to me, and I knew in my heart that I had it. What I told people is that I had at least 10 years of solid story material lined up for the Moth. And when we got cut off after 5 issues from Dark Horse, we'd only just begun. And I ended up, that happened around the time, a little before the last San Diego convention in 2005, I guess, and I began to search out another publisher, like anyone would do at that point. And after going through the process and the inevitable fiasco of trying to find another publisher, I realized that all this was a bunch of silliness, and what I really had to do was think about what I really needed to do, and that was to form my own thing, do things exactly the way I wanted them to do, and basically hire a crew of really good, loyal people that were in comics for the same reason I was, which is to always have a good time and explore everything that your creative views can take you. And in fact, that's exactly who I have on board. All the people that are working with me are think identically to me in that way.
Well, I know one of the big announcements from Rude Dude was Nexus is coming back, the return of Nexus. We've seen Nexus since, I guess, 97. And I know there was a lot of rumor and things going around about Nexus and why we hadn't seen a return of that character with you and Mike Baron. Can you let us know how it came about that Nexus is returning?
Yeah, basically, you know, from the time it got canceled in 97, we weren't at all reluctant to sign a deal with another company. We just had to sign a deal with a company who was worth signing a deal in the first place, and that's where the problems came in. None of them were offering anything that was considered in any way fair, and it was easy for me to drop these things. Baron is a little more commercial-minded about these things than I am, but fortunately I was there to veto him at all times. And eventually, when the whole Rude Dude thing came about, initially it was simply a vehicle for the Moth, because as I mentioned, I had 10 more years of stories in my head that Gary and I would want to do. And then it is popping into my head that, well, obviously this I've been waiting forever for the right time to bring back the Resurrect Nexus. And obviously there is no better time. So I got on the phone to Baron and we talked about it, and it was pretty much a done deal. I was expecting Baron to be what he was when I stopped, you know, working together with him on Nexus in 97. But in fact, I was in for a bit of a shock. His writing style had changed quite a bit. At one point, we could not come to an agreement on what to do with a story. I wanted it to be one thing, and he wanted it to be something else. But just so the truth is known, Baron has always come around at the end and apologized for being so dumb. telling me that I was right all along, to no one's surprise, especially mine. So eventually, I had to bribe him into doing, give it another shot. And he miraculously came through. The old Baron still existed somewhere deep down. I just had to kind of suction it up with a toilet plunger. And, eventually he did turn up something that was not the greatest thing he's ever written, but it was certainly worthy to see where it would go. And I know once I got Baron, I got his wheels turning. He, especially working with me, we would eventually come to the point where we were when we left the book in 97, which is kind of one mind, two bodies. And so far, it's worked out very well.
And you guys really are picking up where you left off in 97. You're picking up at issue 99, is that correct?
Yeah. For all these years, for some reason, I was under the impression that we ended with 98. And then I had to reacquaint myself with the reality, and I found that it was 99. It would have been good if it was like 96, so we could do a full run and end with 100. That would have been proper. But
there's a lot of people scrounging in their boxes looking for 98. Like, totally confused. Where did that book go? I was going to mention that I'm a huge fan of Nexus, and I was a little bit too young when it first came out, and it was one of those things I sort of discovered as I sort of went on reading as I got older. And I was wondering if you could just sort of give a quick description of what Nexus is all about and why someone who it's a great science fiction book and maybe why it separates itself from other science fiction type stories.
Well, honestly, I'm probably the last person you'd want to ask to explain the whys of it. I literally never think about why it's popular or the appeal of things. All I know is that it entertains me hugely, and it was a great world to live in for all those years. Like The Moth, I also knew that that Nexus would have to come back at some point because, well, for crying out loud, we left, you know, the main heroine, Sunny Honey, Sandra Peel, pregnant for 10 years, and there's just so much more to tell. I think you know, I don't know why things work out the way they do in life. It's part just karmic fate, and it's part whatever. But you know, when things happen for a reason, you're normally able to tell the why of it with hindsight. There isn't enough distance yet for me, even as I'm drawing these new books, to really understand what that hindsight is going to teach me. But I normally seem to see a pattern, a reason, a beneficial reason why things happen the way they do. And I actually plan on finishing out my life and as much as I'll be lucid in my 60s or 70s with these books here, The Moth, Nexus, and whatever we do for Rude Dude.
Let's hope it's a long run then.
Yeah.
it's going to be a long run because there's so much more to talk about and to say.
Well, I know you've talked about that quite a bit in interviews that I've read and things. And one of the things you've often said is that when asked when Nexus was going to return, you said when we needed him the most. And I was wondering, is this the perfect time for Nexus to come back?
Well, again, I think hindsight will tell me in a bigger way that's possible for me to know at the moment. And I suspect that, well, my life has always seemed to work in patterns like that. Looking back, I can see a deliberate trail, a deliberate something that seems to be working in my favor, you know, regardless of my own personal ignorance or my whatever at the moment. It almost seems as though life is looking out for me because I'm not smart enough to do it myself sometimes.
Well, you know, looking back at the time that Nexus was coming out, you know, First Comics really kind of stirred up the industry. They came out with comics that, like, no one else was coming out with. You had American Flag,
and Badger, Dark Star. And,
you know, what was it like?
Grimjack.
Yeah, what was it like being a part of that First Comics crew at that time?
Well, I tell you, honestly, you guys, it was actually when we actually started with Capital Comics,
yeah,
and that's
right.
When it was the most absolute fun of all times, because that's literally what I have cooking now with Rude Dude. I have about five people on staff that are all getting paid on the back end, which is a huge financial burden off my back, because they all believe in what I'm doing and what we're all doing so much. But it started with Capital, and that's when it was like a dream. I would just walk up to the office at the Capital, get a nice half a mile walk in from where I lived in my apartments back then, and I would go up, and Rich Bruning would be there, and Sin Babe, I called her Sin Babe, she was the secretary. She hated that name. And then there was, we eventually recruited Corinne, and the other guy, I can't remember, but it was just this cool group of people that just kind of hung out. Baron would go up there all the time and yell at people when they'd leave, and I'd go up there and drop stuff off, and it was just a great situation. When we moved over to First, I remember things got a little more homogenized, and of course that was, by nature, I'm resentful of anything that's going to take the individual personality, anything that I wanted, anything that I could dream up, I could do with Capital. But with First, it was more like fitting into a format. But I got used to it because I wasn't as opinionated back then as I am now about things, which is good. Thank God we're not that way when we're young. So I kind of went with it, and the 80s was a great time. It was just this incredibly cool time. Not only were comics exploding in a way that the industry had never seen before, and that these people kind of came out of nowhere wanting to publish and put out their own book, but the music was so great. I remember the 80s just being some of the coolest times for that entire decade of music. Was just the neatest, like, disco-spawned, new wave stuff with a great dance beat. I'd go to all these clubs with, you know, whatever girl I was dating at the time, or I'd go out with Baron sometimes to listen to stuff, and it was just a really great time to be in your 20s, a fantastic time.
Madison's a great place to live in your 20s, because I lived in Madison for a while.
Yeah, so. we've got a badger here, by the way.
You got a badger?
Yeah. I lived in Madison for, like, 6 years.
Oh, okay.
And I enjoyed it.
Remember the Halloween parties?
I got tear gassed.
You got tear gassed.
Well,
you must have been one of those upstarts that the police.
I know, it was.
The red flag above.
I saw a guy dressed up like George Washington kick in the window of a liquor store and steal alcohol, and then a guy dressed up like Mr. Rogers called me a cocksucker.
Nice.
There you go. It was a great. I had a great time there.
Wow, let's go.
I had a more serious.
People like that, you know.
Hey, yeah.
It's making around with it.
Exactly. One of the things I really enjoyed about sort of all those books that sort of started off at Capital Comics was sort of how big everything was in those books. There were so many characters. There were so many locations. It just seemed like everything that happened in those books was on such a large scale. Was that sort of an interesting challenge as an artist?
Listen, I've never seen it was fun. You know, there's an evolution that takes place in a person when they first start out, that gradually gets to the middle of where you are in your life, and then presumably the end. That I find fascinating. You know, back then it was just so exciting to be doing this stuff that you were just working on the fumes of just the energy and the excitement of finally doing comic books, because I love comic books more than anything on earth. They were just the coolest thing. And it was all due to my upbringing, because I grew up in Kirby and Spider-Man and things like that, and that was just the greatest time ever to be reading comics. And then the 70s came along, and I got into Master of Kung Fu. I was a big Bruce Lee fan, Kung Fu TV show fan. And I was just so excited to be part of that world back then. The feeling that you kind of felt as though, I'm almost a peer with people at Marvel now, and we've got all these great letters from fans, and I always felt an obligation, if not inwardly, but to people that depended on you to always entertain them. So for some reason, I always had a strong obligation. I think Baron did too, because we knew the work had to have certain standards, and that was that. We just went about going about telling our stories. Half the time, I was laughing when I drew these things, because the stories that Baron turned into were so funny. I couldn't stop laughing at these things. He would do these zany things with the characters, like bringing in the badger and stuff, and this goofy sense of humor he had. So it was just too much fun.
Hello, I'm Kieran Gillen, writer of Phonogram, and, well, just Phonogram. You're listening to Around Comics.
It does bring up a question that I had in regards to inkers, and who is going to be inking the new Nexus? Are you going to be inking it, or is Gary going to be inking it, or someone else?
Well, it's an interesting situation because none of us are getting paid up front. But these guys are only going to survive if they've got day jobs. I know the colorist Glenn it works as a night watchman, which I can't imagine him doing, since if I was a clerk, I'd run right over the guy. He's so nice, you know. That's a nice church-going young man. And Gary found work with Marvel, but the two guys he's working with, the two artists he's working with that he's inking over, are such flakes that he never knows when the work is going to get turned in. So fortunately, that's going to work to our advantage because he's got the entire first issue of Nexus at his board right now.
Oh, great.
And so Gary's going to, you know, this is one of the cool things about this whole thing is that these guys are going to have as much fun as I do. They just tell me what they want to do, and they can do it. Just like I'm going to be thinking of all these crazy, wild, wacky ideas that would honestly never be seen if I hadn't taken charge here and just decided that I want my own bag here. I want my own deal where I can do exactly what I want, and the only one that's stopping me from doing it is me.
Going back to the Moth and kind of that situation, there are a lot of comics out there that need time and room to breathe, that they need more than five issues to, you know, develop a universe. I mean, that was one of the things about Nexus, is that it developed this huge sprawling universe, and it doesn't sound like the Moth had time to do that. Do you feel that in the industry, you know, not even right now, but maybe, you know, forever, that people just don't give comics enough time to develop their, you know, sense?
That could well be, but again, that's another thing I'm taking out of my personal equation by starting my own company. As long as I can stay solvent and be smart about the business decisions, I know that all the creative ones are going to be the right ones.
Well, with the Moth, I know you've talked before about that character and the characters around the Moth in the circus and how you've got a lot that you have planned for that. Can you give us any sort of foresight into what, you know, where that character is going to go?
Yeah, when the book got canceled, it literally felt as though I had barely even left the starting gate. This is kind of a weird feeling that creative people have internally, that they know that they have so many great ideas in their head that it will simply be a crime against creativity and the business itself were something to be prematurely severed. And I can tell you a little bit. Let's see, there's going to be this guy that looks like Antonio Banderas coming into the crew as a lion tamer. And he's kind of on the outs with most people except for the women because he's a super charmer. And he starts to make a play for Sophie, who's kind of Jack's about to be pseudo girlfriend if things go as planned with him. And he gets jealous. And Antonio knows about this, and there's this friction that develops between them, and ultimately ends up in this duel with sword. So think about Antonio in his Zorro costume, you know, facing off against Jack. And Jack is a great character because he's, you know, there's a reason why he's the focus of the whole book. He's extraordinarily strong, mostly just due to the luck of the genes. And he's extremely physical, and his friends in the circus, I think, push him a lot farther than he might go on his own. This is his, you know, they always hear about the circus people being family. So he's got his family in there, particularly a guy named Melvin Strongarm, who's the muscle guy, the strong man. And he's the one that makes Jack keep up with his workouts and keeps the variety of training going that he needs, not only for the circus as an acrobat, but for a guy that goes out in a costume and nails these guys that have jumped bail. So I don't know how. I think what's going to happen is, well, I'm not sure. That's the fun part. You know, we set up these scenes, and basically, it's at times it's literally the characters kind of whispering in our ear as to what and how it should end. But we know it can't be easy for them. It's going to be hard. And then it gets from there, it gets harder and harder. It never gets easier and easier until something finally blows up. And there's the climax of your story. We're going to keep Antonio around for a while, but he's got another side to him that is going to get Jack pretty ticked off.
Talking about the character's evolution, and that was one of the things that over the last couple of weeks I went back and was reading a lot of the Nexus stuff and was just simply amazed at how you and Mike had created such an amazing universe that Nexus could travel in. And you could take that story in any direction you possibly could imagine, and did in directions that nobody imagined. But was that something that you came up with initially? I mean, was that something that the two of you had sort of pre-thought out, or was it just a natural evolution of the story?
Well, in the beginning, you guys, it was all Baron. Baron had the concept. He had worked at all these dead end jobs for so long, he was probably ready to blow a gasket with all the ideas that he wasn't able to release from his brain. Strange as it is sometimes, mine being even stranger. But I remember we got together one time with this French restaurant, and he started, this is back when I think Nexus number 3 was about to come out, and he was just telling me the whole story of Nexus. So he'd obviously put a lot of thought into it. Back then, Baron could do no wrong. His stories were just so good. It was just this great, great thing to have him come by every month with a new script, and I wouldn't let him leave until I read it, because I wanted to make sure it was good enough. And it was always good enough. I would read it as someone who was a fan, you know, and just look at it and laugh and, you know, just have a good time with it. And then once that was over, it was time to get to work and produce something that wouldn't shame either one of us.
I think it did that.
Yeah, no question.
Well, we're all big fans of the archives, and we actually had a question from our forum. Scott Cederlin wants to know if Dark Horse will be continuing with the Nexus archives.
Well, I've learned this about business only recently, because I'm so non-business in my brain. It seems to be a big hole when it comes to something like that. But if they sell, they'll keep doing more. That's the bottom line. And I just got word that they are going to be doing another volume.
Any plans for soft cover trades at all?
I hope so. I know that Rude Dude's going to be doing those.
Great.
Here's another remarkable thing about being in charge of something. You don't have to wait for somebody to tell you what their next great idea is going to be, because you already have one. And if it's whatever you can see, whatever you can think is going to be the most beneficial to the integral links that I have as a publisher, which is the retailers and Diamond and so forth and the fans, I'm going to make sure that they get exactly what they want to make their life, as I call it, easier than they would go through with some bigger, higher overhead kind of company. I mean, they can literally reach me with a phone call. If they tell me what they want, I will do everything I can to make their day. It's an instant kind of a speed of thought kind of a thing. And we're always thinking about this stuff. It's just the right time in my life to be doing this. I've been in the business long enough so that I know what I want. I know what's fun. I know what's going to creatively fulfill me. And the rest of the guys feel exactly the same way I do. Rather than continue the way most people do in life, which is just doing work for hire for other companies, I'm not going to go that route anymore. I'm simply going to take what I know to be the best route I could ever imagine in life, and just pursue it. Make sure that I stay in business long enough so that I can retire knowing that I fulfilled what I was absolutely put here for, namely the Moth and Nexus.
Hearing you talk sort of about your beginnings with Capital Comics, and sort of hearing your discussions about how you sort of enjoy the structure of Rude Dude, in your experience, how has sort of the environment in comics changed for an indie company from when you started to now? Is there a huge difference? Is there more opportunity, less opportunity?
I have no idea.
You'll find out.
You're going to find out, yeah.
I would just... The only difference that I know is that there's 1,000 more people wanting to do it now than there were in the 80s, because it wasn't something... It had to be invented first.
Right.
And now there's literally dozens and dozens. maybe hundreds of independent books that are out there with all these really sincere people that love comics so much that they're willing to sacrifice almost anything to fulfill their longing, their dream, and their yearning to be a comic artist, even if it's not for, you know, Marvel working on the X-Men, for crying out loud. It's just their own little thing. I think it's a very healthy thing. I try to support these people any way I can. I try to, one of the things I do in San Diego is a lot of times I'm set up next to them, that very group of people, these independent publishers next to my booth. And I like to go around and just, say hi, ask them what they're doing, ask them a few questions, and just kind of give them not really a pep talk, but just, kind of a subtle congratulations for having the courage to do what you're doing. Cause they're probably people that have been rejected by a lot of the typical avenues that most people would want to be a part of, and having failed that, they're still willing to keep going and trying. That takes a lot of courage.
Steve, as you know, you're now more, now I don't want to say into your veteran years as a creator, but
your golden years. You're in your,
well, we got Hillary sitting next to us, so you know, it's not that bad.
I'll go home and get inking.
But I mean, you're not a Marvel young gun anymore.
I'm very, very accepting of that. One of the reasons is because of Jack Kirby. Mm-hmm. Knowing that Kirby, and I didn't know this until but maybe 5 years ago, when he turned 50, he was doing the most. He was at his apex in life, mm-hmm. artistically and everything else. And when he did the New Gods, he was well into his early 50s. Early to mid 50s, and I just turned 50 a couple days ago. So I use it as a kind of a personal yardstick, using Jack as a personal yardstick of what can be.
Do you feel any sort of responsibility, or if not responsibility, eagerness to pass on a lot of what you've learned and help a whole new generation of comic book artists kind of mature?
As a matter of fact, thanks for asking that. That's a very strong purpose that I feel inside myself, especially now the way comic books have changed so much that I haven't felt the need to read them in so long because of how they've changed over the years. They're just not fun to look at or read. Now what I see when I look at a comic book cover is a lot of dark colors that so dark that I can't even recognize what the heck is going on in the cover, even if I wanted to find out in the first place, which I don't. So I basically just have my books that showed me what comic books were all about from the very early 60s to the 70s. That's what comic books were to me and still are. And the fact that they've gone in such a different direction is actually something that's, you know, it's painful to me in a way, but it's just not something that I'm interested in anymore, especially when I think the 90s came about. That's when most of the changes happened with the Image guys having the affectation in the business that they did. I watched it with great curiosity, mostly because of the fact that people were making millions of dollars and everyone was getting a little crazy in the head about wanting to jump on that bandwagon. I'm really glad I wasn't a 20-year-old kid back then, because that would have really distorted my sense of what I was there in the first place to do with comics, and thank God for that. I guess the way I think about things now is I have to really remain true to what I think comics are best at doing, especially reflective of the year that I was reading comics and found them to be the most entertaining. That's what I'm trying to perpetrate, carry on with Rude Dude.
Well, that brings up a question from one of our forum members, Shane White. He had a few questions, but one of them pertinent to this in particular. He said, since Andrew Loomis books are hard to get these days for cheap, have you considered doing updated anatomy books from the classical foundation that most schools are missing?
Oh boy, I've had some real wacky people from Watson Guptill walk up to me and ask me to do that very thing. And I said, look, let's make it easy on everyone here. Just reprint the damn Loomis books.
They're out there. There's stuff already done.
They're out there, and it can't be rocket science to find a way to, you know, continue these books in print. But for some reason, just nobody is determined enough to break through these walls and put these books back in where they deserve to be in the world of art instruction. Find the real thing, because that's what it's all about, and that's what I learned from. And I couldn't. I couldn't be what I am without those Loomis books.
Probably find them on the internet.
They are available on the internet. You can get them online illegally, but have you considered doing any type of? I know you worked with Gary Martin on inking the comic book inking, but have you considered doing any type of instruction books or any type of other comic instruction?
Well, in fact, I have had a book, an art of book, in the works for the last I guess year and a half or so, with a guy named John Flesky. And this book is going to be, I guess what you'd call a coffee table book. It's going to be well over 200 pages. And it's going to cover every facet of what I am from beginning to present. And there's going to be a lot of parts in there that explain everything that I've learned about art so far in the typical, you know, to the point ways that I've learned and the ways that I wanted to learn from the very beginning to straight answers on something that weren't convoluted or contradictory or overly complex. And my whole life of my sketchbooks, my 25, 26, 27 sketchbooks, have basically been kind of a journey in which I've just tried to distill everything down into something. Were I to be a teacher, I could explain to anyone virtually in an afternoon. And then once I would explain it, it would be a matter of having them come over and just reinforce the basic ideas of art over and over and over until they were programmed in their brain enough so they could just fly with it on their own and do and be their own person after a while. So a lot of that's going to be in the book.
Going back to Jack Kirby a little bit, I was reading Nightmare in Blue yesterday again, and it struck me as how much of, and you've talked before about how much Kirby was an influence of yours.
Yeah.
But I never really noticed it as much as I ever did in that book for some reason. Was there something specific that you were trying to accomplish with that, or was it just something that came out in the book for whatever reason?
Well, actually, it was fairly deliberate. I'm sure you're referring to some of the big monsters that were found in the caverns.
Yeah.
The Celestials.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what you know made me be so pronounced in my Kirby influence with these monsters, but I think just in the back of my head, to let it come out the way I don't know. I just thought Kirby monsters were the coolest thing on earth, and just to take a shot at doing them without in any way stealing from him, because that would be so wrong to do that. Just in Jack's memory alone, but just to see what comes out of me with all this Kirby influence I've been indoctrinated in into my style after all these years, and just have a good time. I just remember thinking, boy, this sure looks like Kirby. I hope people can enjoy it as much as I had doing it, and not see it as something that got a little too far in borrowing from him or usurping his style a little too much.
Well, I was always more of a fan of Kirby's machines. I just always loved, like, in the Fantastic Four, where someone would walk into a room and there would just be this crazy machine that's bigger than what you... You know, if someone says, here's a machine to go into another dimension, that machine better look crazier than what you can draw, because then it doesn't make any sense. And I always loved that when, you know...
His machines look like they actually worked.
Yeah, or the monsters are... They're bigger than what you would draw.
They're more monstrous than
what
you can imagine.
Than what you would think.
Well, hey, we have another forum question. This is from actually one of our favorite artists. This is from Chris Somney, and he says, his question to the dude, just curious, what went into your decision to use more of a house style for your work at Marvel? Was it just that these were your favorite interpretations of the characters, like Romita's Spidey or Kirby's Thor, or was it more of a tip of the hat to artists themselves? All the best to you and the entire Rude family, since they're always so nice when I drool over your work at shows. Take care.
That's great. It's actually not an homage in any way. It's pretty funny how the people at Marvel reacted to what I was doing, because I had to think about, you know, all these people that were asking me, well, what's with this Kirby thing? You know, what's with Romita or whatever in Spider-Man? And the reason that the permanent answer that I came up for all this was that I was imprinted very early on to know that this was Spider-Man to me.
That's what Spider-Man looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, and to draw him in the style that I knew him as being. In other words, it there wouldn't be much of a sense of reality of it being Spider-Man if it didn't reflect the Romita books that I grew up reading. I mean, if it wasn't going to look like that, I don't know what I would do with it.
Well, that's, would you ever, I guess that's sort of interesting because that brings to mind when you're handed something that you don't create from scratch, how does that sort of affect you as an artist when you're given Spider-Man as opposed to you can draw Nexus and you can sort of just draw Nexus however you want? Is there more of a challenge to having to draw Spider-Man?
Or responsibility?
And, yeah,
no,
like, is that,
it was fun.
It was just, yeah, I'm so stupid.
That Spider-Man story, I swear, was the funnest one I did of all those books. I mean, because I was so familiar with the character and the storyline that we are adapting from and progressing from, it was just pure bloody fun. It was just, I couldn't get enough of it. I did the work fast. I loved the editor that I was working with, Ralph Macchio. He was so compliant with everything that I wanted. He never got in my way and told me, how dare you try to copy Romita or any of that kind of nonsense. To me, I was just bringing back the only Spider-Man that was ever real, and that's why it was so much fun. A challenge, absolutely, but that's part of the fun of it.
I would ask you to tell your friends about the Around Comics podcast, but let's face it, your friends are a little bit on the two-dimensional side, aren't they?
A couple more questions on Nexus, just because I'm such a huge fan of it, and I gotta ask you. One, are we going to see the return of Badger at all?
A long time ago, I decided, when I started to take more part in the plots of Nexus, I was, after a certain period, I would say like the three-quarters period, I started to just all of a sudden have these ideas percolating in my head about story ideas. And I asked Baron, can I throw a few at you? She says, yeah, I can use all the help I can get. Most of them came out of the Daily News, which isn't hard. You want to find a lunatic that's going to open up the newspaper. So I decided at some point, I don't know when, it was a while ago, that there had to be one more appearance of the Badger. We had to do something completely zany to outdo ourselves from the first two times he appeared. And just, that would be, I just knew it had to happen one more time. So absolutely, he's going to come back when he's needed most.
Sal's smiling gigantically.
Sal
jumped
may
up
be
and down.
The biggest Badger fan in the world.
I'm a huge Badger fan. Over the last year, I've had the opportunity to meet both Bill Reinhold and Mike Norton and gotten Badger pages from both of them. So it's very good to hear that Badger will return.
Sal's crying. It's going to get all over the computer.
I'm a little emotional.
He's a little teared up now.
Badger's coming back,
once.
Baby. Shut up, Larry.
Well, I got to tell you, of all the stories I've done of Baron for Nexus, when I did those Badger stories, I was almost in hysterics. The guy is so loony. In the weirdest thing that I remember about those appearances of Badger and Nexus, people would write in and say, "How come the Badger isn't as funny as in his own book?" And I thought, well, I don't know. I think he's just this perfect supporting character to be sandwiched in between Nexus and Fred, as I call him, or Judah.
Yeah.
These three guys getting together with like this was like this moment of like nonstop serious hilarity that I couldn't stop. I had to come up for air. I was laughing so hard.
That's awesome.
The great thing about the Badger is that he's only like 1 degree separated from 99% of superheroes. Like he's crazy, but he's not that much more crazier than someone dressed
up like,
like Spider-Man. Like this, the very thin line.
Well, I kind of can see that because he did seem to fit in so well with those two characters, and it was just that world. It was like it wasn't strange for him to just pop up and. For them to completely accept him, because that was the world you guys created. It was anything could happen, anything goes, and he fit in, and in some instances he even sort of, brought some level of sanity to it. If that's wow. You know, I mean, if that's not too strange to say, but
when they had to take on the philosophical challenge when they're in that big world that's a bowl.
The bowl shaped room. Anyway, okay, all right, enough about
the nerdery. The badger nerdery.
Yeah, we got to stop talking about badger because Sal goes.
Yeah,
on.
I'll just turn into a complete geek here. Speaking of hilarious stuff, what about the Clone Zone? Are we going to see any more sleazebag production vids or any?
I don't know. I know he's going to appear. I'm sure the Baron's going to want to bring him back. And I remember I had a really hard time with him in the beginning, until I decided to turn him into Rodney Dangerfield. So I got all my pictures of Rodney Dangerfield and literally tried to adapt a lizard face for Rodney. And that's when I stopped despising the character, because I thought he was trying too hard to be funny. And I have to talk with Baron more about Clone Zone, because once we turned him into Rodney, he started to become more bearable for me.
I can see that.
Well, you go don't on. Like Back to School? That's a great movie.
Back to School. That was actually filmed in Madison.
I know.
Have you go heard bad, that dude. They're going to film a remake of Back to School?
Oh, come on.
Suntress.
That's probably not a good idea.
Not at all.
They're doing a remake of Back to School.
Ben Stiller is going to be...
Yes, they are.
They're also making a remake of Revenge of the Nerds.
Why? Oh, that's bad. All right. Oh, that's awful.
Wait, we've got another question from the forum. This is from Kwan, who is one of our listeners in Bangkok. And
Kwan is a good friend of mine. She's a real sweetheart.
Oh, okay.
Well, this question makes sense.
Yeah, because we had no idea what these questions meant, but we're like, all right, she must know something we don't know.
Yeah, we were kind of a little weirded out by this, but her first question is, what does Bruce Lee in Thailand have to do with changing his life? And her second question is, what is the best time to call him during the day?
Oh, boy, that figures. Yeah, she called me at 11 o'clock one night, and I chewed her out. Geez, she must be on Thailand time still, even though she's been in the U.S. forever now. There's no excuse. Let's see. Okay, this is going back to a question that I nailed her with in San Diego one year. Me being the Bruce Lee fan that I am and still am, just almost a fanatic. I think there's parallels in my own development. At least I'd like to think anyway. She's from Thailand, and I said, look, I'm sure you're familiar with the connection that Bruce Lee has with Thailand in a little town called Pak Chong. And I don't know if I was pronouncing it right. But every time I brought it up to a Thailander, he looked at me like I was nuts. But that was where Bruce Lee filmed his first movie, The Big Boss, or as it's known here, Fists of Fury, in 1970, I think. And it's notable because here he was about to get... Bruce was about to achieve the thing he had dreamed about forever in this tiny, miserable little cockroach-laden town in Thailand that was as poor as you can imagine. And he was there with a director that he fought with a lot. He had a temperament like mine. He did not like working with people that he perceived as being someone who didn't care about what they were doing. And that's one of my biggest pet peeves, and that's why I'm so happy I have the crew that I have. They're so devoted to absolutely everything that it's almost like we're of one mind of what we have to accomplish with this rude dude outfit here. But that's where his jump into stardom officially began. The dream that he always had for his life, let the world know about gung-fu in the way that he wanted to represent it. And also just to be a star, because he thought he was this magnanimous guy that once the world saw what he could do, he would be a star. And in fact, it was funny because when all of us saw his movie in the theaters for the first time, first off, the ads were great. I can't talk enough about Bruce Lee. The ads were so cool. It was like this ultimate, perfect, aimed at a high school type of a mind ad campaign that you've ever imagined. How did it go? It went like, Bruce Lee, the master of karate and kung fu, will give the biggest kick of your life. He fights dogs, the most ruthless hood, most gorgeous of women, and something like that. It was just everything you ever wanted to do in your life, is be a guy like Bruce Lee. Yeah.
I've always wanted to fight a dog.
And they would show these dog is jumping at him and stuff. He's a pack dog. And the movie just completely did a number in my head that was I can't even think of the word. It just changed everything about me forever. I was just a fanatic about this guy. And I probably shouldn't get into his death because to this day it makes me sad. There is a Bruce Lee convention that took place in Burbank a couple of years ago, put on by the guy who was it. He was the Creation Con people, Adam, what's his name, real nice guy. And it was a three-day convention. It was one of the most professionally put together things I've ever seen in my life, just phenomenal production. And I remember standing around with a bunch of guys. Actually, there were three black guys, all really comic business and all big Bruce Lee fans. And I was standing around these guys. All these guys were huge. I'm 6'5", and these guys were damn near my height. So these huge guys were standing around, reminiscing about our high school days when Fist of Fury came out. And I looked at these guys, and I said, I wanted to get a serious question without all the, the usual trite banter that happens when people get together socially. I said, I want to ask you guys if you ever got over him dying. And there was like this moment, and every one of them looked at me and said, no. And that's the way it is. We felt like it was a combination of our dad, our favorite superhero, and anyone else that we looked at in life, whether it be fiction or nonfiction, and have them just taken away, never to be seen again. We were just, it was such a surreal and unreal experience to have him die when he did to us. It just caused incalculable grief that if we think about it now, we get sad, and always will. That's how much this guy meant to our lives. That's how entertaining he was. That's how innovative he was. That's how special this guy was to us.
So there you go, Quan. Yeah, here's your answer.
Hey, Quan, how's that?
All right, well, Steve, let's wrap up with a couple questions about the future of Rude Dude Productions. Everybody here on the panel, of course, is excited about The Return of the Moth and Nexus. What's your production schedule and release schedule look like for both of those series?
Well, fortunately, I have a pretty shrewd business partner in the form of Princess Gino Ginelli, also known as my wife, real name Janelle Phillips. And she has composed a rather detailed itinerary for all the people involved in Rude Dude. And I basically just do what she tells me to do at the time, and she makes me aware of you need to have this done at this time. Usually I blow the deadline, but I'm working double shifts now, so I'm hoping to get into the groove of things and really just start producing like I did when I was in my 20s. But the formal release date on the first actual Rude Dude product will be for Free Comic Book Day, and that's going to be a Nexus teaser issue, and it's going to be called kind of a subheading of the official title of the book. We're going to call it Nexus's Greatest Hits, and it's going to be a warm up to all the people who know and don't know about Nexus. And it was conceived by me. It's amazing how fun and easy these ideas come when you're in charge of something. It was just a natural idea to kind of cushion and ramp up people for the eventual release of Nexus 99. And I think the first issue of Nexus is slated for right around a few weeks before the next San Diego Con this summer.
Great.
Which is going to be in July, I think. So that's going to be the first time, other than the Free Comic Book Day issue, which is basically a bunch of reprints. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a composite of it was to remind people of all the memories that we've had throughout our almost 100 issue run on Nexus, and just get them thinking about the whole thing again, get them warmed up. That's what I would have wanted if Kirby could suddenly become resurrected and have his skills from the 1960s and continue with a book he's been doing, or do something new, or actually the new guy would be the thing I'd want him to continue. And then we'll start off with with issue 99 and hundreds after that. That's going to be, or they're going to be monthly. We're going to work so far ahead of time that they're going to come out monthly. And so every month there'll be a new issue of Nexus. Baron has already gotten the scripts written. He's very fast and very professional. He's already got all the scripts written for the four issues, and that's how we're going to do them in four-issue increments with the Moth and Nexus. And I think the plan is going to be something like this. We're going to put out Nexus first. Then we're going to go into the anthology, which we've already decided on that we're going to call Amazing Dude Tales. And that's going to be an anthology, which is something of a bad word I found in the industry, because every time you mention the name anthology, they say, anthologies don't sell. Well, this one's going to sell, because it's going to be so much fun. And if there's some problem with the word anthology, you're not even going to think about the word as you're reading this book, because it's going to be so much fun. It's literally every crazy, wacky, serious idea that I've ever had is going to be put into one oversized 64-page book. And we've got some celebrity authors to entice people in ways that traditionalists would never think about entering this particular arena. We're going to have Paul Wilson. Paul Wilson, who's a renowned novelist, best known for his Jack the Repairman novels, going to be contributing an 8-page story. I just got on the phone with him today and talked about, I think we finally got the idea about what we're going to do together. It had to be something really special, really, something really unique, and mostly something really exciting to read. I think we've nailed that. Another thing that's going to be in the anthology is going to be, we're going to revive romance comics. You know, the books that sold millions back in the 50s, and no one has really taken a real stab at since. The fact is, romance occurs in every book there is nowadays. It's just not a featured thing, and in that it's called romance comics anymore. But the romance pervades every story and every comic that's ever been done, because it's so much of a part of the situational things we put our characters through. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Imagine how easy it is. You just think about the idea, and you can just do it. There's no editorial interference. There's no committees to go through. There's no focus groups. There's no nonsense. It's just, this is what I want to do. I think it'll be a great idea. If there was someone who thinks he can succeed with such an outdated idea that no one will ever take a chance at again, it's probably me. And then there'll be a bunch of other goodies that are going to be part of things. Baron and I have a character named Origami, who we couldn't sell to anyone. Gary and I are going to start stories with a silencer, who is another one of the trading card characters that I invented back in 1993 with the Moth. So he's going to come about in his own stories, and Gary has already written a story for it. It's brilliant. I just hope I can survive all this work, because I guess I'm going to be the only artist in all this stuff.
Well, wow.
Jeez. Baron thinks they can't do it. He's already making bets that I'll drop and be in an asylum by the end of the first issue. But put your faith in me. I'm ready to try it, if nothing else.
I think you sound too stubborn to not pull it off.
Well, I have all these different styles. You know, I really have my training so complete. You see me doing this Child Dana Gibson style. I think that's going to be in the Paul. I'm going to use that for the Paul Wilson thing, the romance thing. I don't know what kind of style I'm going to pull off for that, but that's part of what I had in the back of my mind all along.
Romita,
Romita's like
John Romita.
Yeah, John Romita.
John Romita style. I think that's. That he did
a
lot of.
Exactly. Maybe simplify. I don't know. I'm not quite sure how it's going to go. But when I need to know, it'll come out.
Well, it sounds like 2007 and definitely going into 2008 are going to be exciting years for Steve Rude and Rude Dude Productions. Steve, thank you so much for spending part of your evening with us. Best of luck in the coming year. And like I said earlier, we are really looking forward to everything that is coming out.
My purpose and my intent of everything that I do in life is to entertain the reader as much as myself. And I never let myself down, so I'm hoping the readers will feel likewise.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be great work, because you never put out anything bad at this point, so
track record's pretty good.
Yeah,
hopefully we can have you back on and talk about Nexus and the Moth and everything else a little bit later in 2007.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll come back, get together, together and see how I'm doing with the whole thing.
Absolutely. Well, Steve, thank you so much, and you have a wonderful rest of your evening.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Yes, happy belated birthday.
Thank you. A pleasure, you guys.
And a big thanks to Mr. Steve Rude. I think everybody here on the panel is definitely looking forward to the relaunch of Nexus and
no
the
question.
Moth.
Mm-hmm. And the return of Badger.
Yes.
One
I'm
last
very
time,
excited
man.
About yeah. the return of Badger.
I really
They
hope.
Better not kill him.
Who's doing
no.
He's going to show
he's
up,
gonna
in,
show
a
up
Nexus.
In Nexus. Steve, oh. Steve
Actually,
said
no. That. Steve said that the Badger would come back when
well,
we needed
yeah,
him
he
most.
Well, yeah. He had some ideas for Badger. We're not sure when, but... It sounded like
so you finally you're
he's
the payoff for the fact that you show up every week dressed as the Badger.
Finally,
finally,
hey,
finally,
I knew sooner or later.
The denouement to that that great setup every week for an entire year.
I don't know what it is about the Badgers. It was just always that something about that character because it was.
I liked it was for his took place in Madison.
Well, you had that sure. It was local, and I you know ah damn it. You know what I forgot to mention to him is that. He's the reason that I every once in a while will go and buy a six pack of Point beer.
Oh,
not because
yeah,
of
yeah.
Badger.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
every once in a while I
no,
will
it's
do that
a Midwestern because, thing.
But I don't know. To me, it was like it was almost a parody comic. In some, I always thought Badger was just making fun of Wolverine or the Punisher and those
bit, yeah.
like over the top. Well, that too, and people from
Madison.
Is
Hillary still over there trying to type that first sentence?
You know what?
You're in line.
Like we said earlier, he's not that far removed.
Right,
from,
right.
I mean, like, Wolverine's a psychopath.
Yeah, exactly. That's
you know,
right.
like, that's what it is.
It was a nice sit-
and by
All
the
right,
way,
enough
tidbit.
Bad. Good Lord, enough bad.
Tidbit. Point beer is the old style recipe back in the day.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Old
no
style
change like
recipes
it.
at one point back in
well,
the day.
Well, interestingly enough, there's a new beer out that uses the old style recipe. I can't think of what it's called now, but I know it exists. I was at, well, I don't want to tell you where I was at, but I was turned on to this, like, cheap ass.
What the fuck was that? Yeah, what the
no,
fuck did you tell me?
No, it just would get weird. I don't want to get into it, but. Anyway, but there's a new – I can't think of the name of it, but there's another beer out that uses the old which was fantastic.
Too.
Old style was a really good
Point
taste.
Used to be, and now Point's different from that even. So
is it?
Old, yeah.
Point got bought out by
yeah.
Oh. So,
yeah.
Years.
Welcome to BeerCast.
We used to drive up to buy it because you could only get it within a certain area. They wouldn't distribute
right,
it.
It's just like
right.
New Glarus Spotted Cow, which is one
it
of my
was
favorite
like the
beers.
Coolest beer
if anyone in Wisconsin.
Couldn't have it. You know, people would bring it in at parties.
Well, wasn't that Coors, too?
That was Smokey and the Bandit, man.
You couldn't get, yeah, exactly. You couldn't get Coors.
No. Did you ever hear about Greasy Dick beer in the St. Louis area?
No,
I swear to God.
I don't think I've heard of that one.
Yeah, Greasy Dick beer.
No one's ever heard of that.
Was that like an old guy in a tunnel asking you to come down and taste his Greasy
You'd
Dick?
Like to have some Greasy
Shazam
Dick.
Shazam has turned into the running joke here, hasn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
Yeah, and put some head on it.
Oh.
That's
Hillary
why Hillary's the professional comedian. The
nice.
Professional.
Speaking right, of Greasy comic. Dick, it's the year of Alan Moore.
Oh, Tom!
What?
I
like
can't,
Alan Moore?
No,
listens.
No. Trust me, Tom. Do not speak badly of Alan
I'm
Moore.
Telling Alan, you said that.
People get upset. And
I love Alan Moore.
I some said some things get, about Alan last well, week.
If there's one thing you can say about Alan. His dick is not greasy.
There's one. In his all his long scripts, it's always written very small at the bottom.
No greasy
dick.
No
greasy dick.
No GD.
No GD.
No,
what does no GD mean?
I thought it was no goddamn.
Okay, yes, the year of Alan Moore. If you folks haven't heard about it already, on if you check out the forum at Around
Can
Comics.
I make a caveat to everything that I've ever said about Alan Moore?
Yes.
Please, just for anyone that...
He's your favorite writer of
is,
all time.
He is my favorite writer of all time. I think the man is a genius, and in all seriousness, he has done probably the greatest comic book work ever, in my opinion.
It's just like
Except for the whole Splash
but
Brannigan
occasionally,
stuff.
Well, there was that.
I mean,
but occasionally...
You know, everybody has their...
Occasionally, Alan can be full of shit, just like anyone else on the planet. That's all I'm going to say.
Just well, like
just not a greasy dick.
No, I never said he had a greasy dick.
So we're reading Watchmen this month.
Yes.
Yeah.
and a Complete Ballad of Halo Jones.
Yeah.
Does anybody have that?
I've got it in order. And then next month is V for Vendetta and Skiz. But speaking of The Watchmen, we have a new contest here at Around Comics.
Yes.
Tom, why don't you tell them about the contest and the origins of said contest?
I will read this strictly from the script, which is why I will be speaking in the third person. Who watches the caterers? More importantly, who watches Tom when he orders things online? Apparently no one, including Tom. He ordered two copies of Absolute Watchmen after a long day of drinking and watching football. True story. I was watching the Packers. I came home and ordered it. Instead of returning... What? Stupid Badgers?
Packers.
Oh, okay. Badgers aren't stupid. They won 12 games, most ever. Instead of returning it, he is going to reward a lucky listener with a copy of Absolute Watchmen. Yes, even foreigners can win this. Tom is essentially lazy.
Thank goodness.
He knows why Watchmen is influential, but would like you to explain it to him as well. All he wants is a paragraph sharing a theme explored in Watchmen that is also explored in a current favorite book of yours. Send the entry to tom@aroundcomics.com. Along with the paragraph, please include your full name and email address, one entry per person. Creativity won't win you the prize, but we guarantee it will get read on the show if we find it interesting. We will ship it internationally, so bring the thunder, Australia.
We're calling you out.
No Tom boring. Reserves the right to reject your entry if he doesn't think you put any thought into it. So please know Avengers is about fighting, and so is Watchmen. He's lazy, but demands intellectual excellence. All entries must be received by January 31st, 2006. One entry per person.
I'm just glad that you read that in the third person, because finally people get a taste of what we put up with on a daily basis, because Tom always talks.
Tom's mic's hot.
Yeah, that's all we hear.
Getting a lot of feedback.
Tom wants
Tom's
you to
monitor.
Get him a beer. Now, Chris.
Tom's getting a lot of feedback in his monitor.
Well, that's a great, great prize and a great contest, Tom. And
the art looks beautiful.
Tom,
I've been reading
Tom,
it
get drunk more often around Christmas. Orders, okay. Sal,
I ordered two Lexuses.
Shopping Around Comics. I just added a bunch of new stuff to the store at Around Comics. I did a little spotlight section. We have a bunch of Gene Colan stuff.
Great.
A bunch of Steve Rude stuff. A bunch of other stuff. There's
Nexus.
There's all the Nexus archives as well as some other Steve.
But
and
for
Baron.
This month, you want to buy them from InStockTrades.com.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Sorry, Cameron.
Buy them from InStockTrades.
InStockTrades.com.
And a bunch of other stuff on there too. So
our tools. God
yeah.
Damn
it. Nice going, Tom.
And by Absolute New Frontier there also. $52. It's awesome.
And it's worth every single penny. Last week, and I told this to Chris.
They smell great.
Last week, you know, we did the whole 2006, our favorite books and everything, and we didn't really have a category for, like, collection or... But I think in 2006, the Absolute New Frontier was my favorite book that I read all of last year. It was
just packaging overall, the slipcase, everything.
It's gorgeous.
To me, and I know people probably argue about this, to me, well, maybe the Absolute Crisis, those two to me are, like, the two best packaged...
They have
collected.
The Absolute Sandman's pretty nice.
Yeah,
too. Well. But I think
is it water resistant for your tears?
Tom, you just have to pick on those poor.
Hillary's showing me Eric Powell's Christmas card, so
that he sent out.
Oh yeah, it's good stuff.
Oh no,
it's sacrilegious.
It's a minor, but yeah, you can. Yeah, yes, much goon-like humor. All right. Guys, there's a few ways to spread the Around Comics love. First
like
way,
herpes?
You can take part
if
of our...
If you're pregnant and you get it, your baby will be blind.
No more gonorrhea jokes. God, Tom.
We have the new infected condoms, Around Comics condoms.
You can take part of our listener LCS challenge. It's very easy. On just about any page of the Around Comics website, you can click on the LCS challenge, download our flyer, ask... ever so kindly, your LCS manager or owner, if they would display our flyer in their store. If they do so, we will mention both you and the store on the show and provide a link to the store at our site. It's that easy. A couple other ways you can
help us
out.
I got a new challenge, Around Comics challenge.
Worst flyer ever.
The first person that gets an Around Comics tattoo, Around Comics tattoo, I will send you... a Conan #1 and a Peter Parker Spectacular Spider-Man #1. Damn. Both of those books, I mean, that's a retail value of, I don't know, a couple hundred dollars.
I'll be back in 20 minutes.
It has
minutes.
To be a... No, you can't win.
You can't
it has to. It has to be a real...
I can't wait to
around comics tattoo. And yeah, well, that
Jesus Christ.
But, and it has to be at least... I might get 3 inches in diameter.
I might get nauseous if I see it. Like, oh God!
We're gonna have to review this one. All right, folks.
Oh, and those are from my personal collection.
Yes,
it's like
they
when
are.
I paid,
I've seen them.
I paid a vegetarian friend $20 to eat a piece of bacon when she was very poor when we were in college.
Did she do it?
Yeah, I gave her the $20.
I think there's got to be some crazy bastard out there that'll do it just for to do it, just
oh,
to say.
Good one.
But if you don't want to make that sort of commitment, what else can you do?
you can give us a dig at dig.com. Very easy. Just go to dig.com, look up Around Comics, and give us a dig. You can also become our virtual friends at Comic Space. That's www.comicspace.com/aroundcomics.
I should mention the other guy that has the Takitani has a website called criticalmess.net, mm-hmm. and he said he screamed like a girl when I mentioned it, so I imagine he's having some sort of
ejaculating.
Yeah, or go get some wipes for
all
your
I know
computer.
Is that so far with Comic Space, mm-hmm. like the only thing that happens on Comic Space, or the
hey,
most common
hi.
Thing,
how you doing?
Is Tom sending me messages to our Around Comics, sending me notes. It's just like, hey.
He said, hey, how you doing, Big Kev, to me earlier this week.
The best time I've ever had.
Oh, good Lord. And finally, my favorite, the iTunes review. If you go to the iTunes Music Store, look up Around Comics, drop us a review. Please be as cool as Andy Parks, if that were even possible.
Check out all the great things at the Around Comics. .com has to offer. It's your source for the best
Tom.
In
well, you wrote it that way. Check out all the great things that
reviews and opinions.
Comics.com
While you're there, please take a minute to fill out our listener survey. It lets us know who we're talking to and how we can make Around Comics a better show.
Yeah.
We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. The CPN is a collection of some of the best comic book podcasts on the net. You can learn more about the network and find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com.
Just so everyone is aware, we post the next week's topic on Tuesdays at our forum at www.aroundcomics.com.
We'd like to thank everyone for joining us today.
Yes, Sal, Tom, Steve Rude, Hillary Varda, everyone, thank you so much. Have a fantastic couple days. We'll be back again on Monday.
Thursday.
No, this is the Thursday episode. It's a time warp, Tom.
Damn it, Tom.
We'll be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime... We'll be everywhere in
and around
fighting dogs.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2006. All rights reserved. Love you, babe. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my left alone? I know that you don't love me. Oh, baby, what is going on? Let me, oh, let me, baby, love you one more time.